You're listening to a podcast hosted by Med Learning Group.
Welcome to the third and final podcast on endometriosis hosted by Med Learning Group, titled Clinical Pearls, Providing a Timely Diagnosis of Endometriosis and Effective Management of Endometriosis-Associated Pain. My name is Cindy Lantner, and I'll be the host of today's podcast. In this episode, we'll be discussing the results from clinical trials of endometriosis medications and their implications for treatment. Joining me again is Dr. Hugh Taylor. Dr. Taylor is Anita O'Keefe Young Professor and Chair, Department of Obstetrics, Gynecology, and Reproductive Sciences at Yale School of Medicine, and Chief of Obstetrics and Gynecology at Yale New Haven Hospital. He's also Professor of Molecular, Cellular, and Developmental Biology at Yale University. Dr. Taylor, thank you for joining us again.
Thank you, Cindy. Glad to be back.
What have been some of the most important clinical trials of agents for endometriosis?
Well, the new drugs that have come out in the last several years that have really revolutionized our treatment of endometriosis have been the GnRH antagonists. We've seen several large prospective randomized placebo-controlled clinical trials that have led to the approval of two of three GnRH antagonists under development. One that we'll talk about in more detail is elagolix, GnRH antagonist. The second is relagolix, another very effective GnRH antagonist. And a third is linzagolix that is not approved in the United States and still undergoing clinical trials for endometriosis.
Elagolix, as you said, was the first of these to be approved for endometriosis. What were the primary and second outcomes in pivotal trials for this agent, and how did elagolix perform against these measures?
So I was involved in the large clinical trials, almost 1,700 women in the elagolix Alaris trials. There were two double-blind and randomized placebo-controlled trials that we published in the New England Journal in 2017 that led to approval of elagolix. The primary endpoint were pain at 3 months. The studies both enrolled women who had endometriosis that had been surgically diagnosed. These were women who had to be premenopausal and have not only moderate to severe dysmenorrhea, but they also had to additionally have non-menstrual pelvic pain. After a washout period, if they were on some prior hormone therapy, they were screened for 2 months to get baseline pain data and then randomized to either receive placebo, a low-dose elagolix at 150 milligrams per day, or high-dose elagolix at 200 milligrams twice a day. They were followed for 6 months, and the primary endpoints were assessed at 3 months. The primary endpoint of dysmenorrhea was quite effectively reduced at that 3 month and 6 month window. The decrease in pain occurred rapidly. Within 2 months, we saw a very substantial decrease in pain. Dysmenorrhea, the score was rated from 0 to 3, no pain, mild, moderate, or severe. And as I mentioned earlier, in order to enroll in this trial, you had to have moderate to severe pain. The baseline score here was 2.2, again, 2 being moderate, 3 being severe, so between moderate and severe. And those receiving the high dose of elagolix, the 200 milligram twice a day, had a decrease in that pain score of almost 2 points. So when you go from 2.2 and decrease by almost 2 points, they're really quite comfortable. We saw a decrease in pain about half that with the low-dose elagolix, not quite as strong as the high-dose elagolix. I tend to use low-dose elagolix for those with milder pain, not with those the moderate to severe pain, but those with milder pain. But where perhaps the oral contraceptive is producing side effects, or where progestin resistance prevents any progestin, including an oral contraceptive, from being effective. So we have two very nice doses here, one for use with I believe, milder pain, and one for use with that moderate to severe pain that's quite effective.
What about the Relagolix trials? Were they measuring the same primary and secondary outcomes?
So the Relagolix, again, had two prospective, randomized, double-blinded, placebo-controlled trials, the SPIRIT trials. These went on for 24 weeks, and they also assessed pelvic pain, both dysmenorrhea and non-menstrual pelvic pain. Results were quite similar. In SPIRIT 1 and 2, there was about a 75% response rate for dysmenorrhea, so very effective drug. Again, these are patients with moderate to severe pain, and 75% response rate is really quite impressive. There's about a 62% response rate for non-menstrual pelvic pain, which again is a very good response rate. The non-menstrual pelvic pain is often harder to treat than the dysmenorrhea. Both of these drugs showed high efficacy. Relagolix was tested using a combination therapy. So the add-back hormone therapy was built in. The Relagolix was coupled in a single tablet with estradiol and norethindrone at a low dose, similar to what we'd use in hormone replacement therapy in menopause. So not only did the Relagolix work very effectively to reduce pain, the combination therapy eliminated many of the side effects that we see from estrogen deprivation and maintained bone density, allowing for longer-term use. It's approved for up to 2 years of use.
Can you talk about the safety profiles of these agents, of Relagolix and Elagolix?
Safety profiles were excellent. The side effects were those that you might typically expect to see from any agent that lowers estrogen levels. On Elagolix, which does not include the add-back hormone therapy, at the low dose, where you get only a partial suppression of estradiol, side effects were very few. There were some incidents of headache or hot flash, but these were mild in the majority of patients, and less than 1% discontinued the study drug because of symptoms. The higher dose, we saw, again, similar types of symptoms, a little higher incidence of hot flushes and headaches. Again, most of them were mild. The discontinuation rate here was about 3% due to those menopausal type symptoms, because add-back therapy was not included in this regimen. The bigger concern with using a higher dose of Elagolix was a loss of bone mineral density. The low dose was approved for 2 years because of the safety for bone. The higher dose, because of the concern for bone density loss, was limited to 6 months. In practice, some of us will use add-back therapy with Elagolix, but it was not tested or approved in this fashion, but approved for 6 months use. The Relagolix, as I've mentioned, comes in a Relagolix combination therapy with add-back estradiol and norethindrone included. So that minimizes the number of hot flushes, headaches, menopausal type side effects, and maintains bone density quite well. There's less than 1% bone loss long-term on the Relagolix combination therapy. So this was approved by the FDA for 2 years administration.
What patient or disease characteristics might lead you to select one GnRH antagonist over the other?
So I think we have now two different GnRH antagonists available. I have some patients who want a lowest effective dose and prefer to be on a very low dose. That might make me choose the Elagolix low dose, but it's not as effective as the higher dose. Patients often want the convenience of once daily dosing. Relagolix is administered once a day. If you move to the high dose of Elagolix, it's a twice a day regimen. So once a day, Relagolix is often more convenient for patients. Also, it has the add back therapy built in. On the high dose of elagolix, I often add customized add back therapy, but that requires someone taking a GnRH antagonist twice a day, plus additional hormone replacement therapy medication. So it becomes a more complex regimen. Patients often like the convenience of the one pill once a day, easy dosing regimen. So I talk to my patients. I think it's a matter of their preference. These are all very effective drugs. The GnRH antagonists as a class work very well controlling endometriosis, even where oral contraceptives or progestins have failed. They're all effective. It's a matter of talking to your patients and helping them decide what regimen might be best for them. Do they want the convenience of once daily single pill dosing with add-back built in? Do they want to try the lowest effective dose? They might want lower dose of elagolix, especially if they have only mild pain. I often use that where an oral contraceptive was effective but produced side effects that were unpleasant. So I think it's customizing the regimen based on your patient's desires.
Are there any ongoing or future clinical trials in endometriosis that clinicians should keep an eye out for?
Yes, I think there are other new hormone-based trials that are up and coming. There's a new trial looking at 17-hydroxysteroid dehydrogenase antagonist that'll block the conversion of the inactive or less active estrone to estradiol that may occur in locally inside the tissue. Another potential hormonal manipulation that holds some promise, but that's still in early stage clinical trials. So it'll be some time before we have that agent available in our armamentarium. But there are other other potential agents that are under development that may be of great promise.
Well, thank you so much for your insights, Dr. Taylor. This concludes MedLearning Group's podcast series on Clinical Pearls, Providing a Timely Diagnosis of Endometriosis and Effective Management of Endometriosis-Associated Pain. MedLearning Group is accredited by the Accreditation Council for Continuing Medical Education to provide continuing medical education for physicians. This CME activity was planned and produced in accordance with the ACCME Essentials. I'd like to give a special thank you to Pfizer and Myovant Sciences, Inc., who provided an unrestricted grant for this educational activity.